Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And this is episode number 143. Today we are discussing The Red Pyramid chapters 39 and 40, the penultimate chapters before the final chapter. And they were a doozy this week. Not quite the cliffhangers from last week, but there was a lot going on.
And some heavy stuff and just a lot of...
Yeah. Speaking of heavy stuff...
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for that transition.
You're welcome.
It was never not going to be awkward. So I have some pretty bad news about Callie, which is that if you guys have been... I can't remember. I'm pretty sure I mentioned her having chronic kidney disease when she was first diagnosed, because I think that was like a year ago.
Yeah.
And if you follow my personal page at all, you can see that I've been, like, posting about her. She kind of started not eating again and having trouble going to the bathroom, which was how we figured out she had the kidney disease to begin with. And at first, we kind of thought it was just, like, a bladder infection. UTI, cats get them really easily. Then we found out that there were, like, crystals in her urine, and she had to go on a different special diet than the diet that I've spent so much money feeding her. And have, like, oh my god, I have so many cans in the cupboard. And, you know... We thought, okay, cool, that's what was going on. Well, unfortunately, just a couple of days ago, I took her back to the vet for a follow-up, and we did find out that she has cancer, and she has a tumor in her bladder. It's pretty aggressive cancer. I think it's called transitional cell carcinoma.
Yeah,
so at this point, it's just about keeping her happy for as long as possible and trying to get her to... I mean, she's getting princess treatment, honestly. Like, she has a buffet of food sitting on the couch. She doesn't even have to go anywhere different. I got her heated blanket out the other day. She's getting all the good stuff.
I was going to say, with the exception of having to take some meds every day being, like, her least favorite thing, she's just living the life.
I mean,
as it should be. You know, when you're not feeling as good or when there's stuff going on, live it up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do your thing, Kelly.
The doctor, the vet, basically was like, you know, the kidney food, like, diet doesn't really matter at this point, so give her whatever she'll eat. So she's been living high on baby food, which she loves. It's about the only thing she will consistently eat.
I gotta say, that was a head trip for me. Like, it didn't occur to me that, like, a gentle on the stomach, but yummy
sense
food for a lot of animals in general would be baby food. Because, it's still chicken, because when they make that baby food, they don't add anything.
Right.
Especially for babies, you have to be really careful of what's in it. So it's basically just very well-blended chicken. Like, that makes total sense. Like, I don't know why I never thought of that, but, like, yeah, that is a very obvious thing.
Yeah, that's been kind of the saving grace, is she will pretty much always eat that, so that's been really good. But, you know, Callie's been around since the start of this podcast. She's been, like, a third member of the team. You know, she's made her appearances over the years. And I just thought that you guys should know. So right now, she's doing okay. She's not 100% herself, but she's still, you know, she's still got the attitude. She's still meowing and begging for food, which now she gets. because, sure, you want to eat, you know, our steak? Yeah, you can have that.
Right.
But, you know, unfortunately, it's probably only a matter of time at this point, so.
So hug your kittens and puppies. Hug them a little extra tight today for us.
If you want to send me pictures of your pets, that would actually help a lot. I know I sound very put together right now, but it's been a very sad household. figuring this out because, you know, the kidney disease, like, we knew, and we knew it was only a matter of time, but there were ways to kind of, like, slow it down.
Combat it.
And this is just, there's really nothing we can do that isn't basically for my benefit instead of hers. You know, radiation is an option and stuff like that, but, like, it's just going to traumatize her more. It's just going to prolong the inevitable.
And it's like, if it was a teeny tiny thing that they didn't think would recur, I'm sure they would consider, like, going in and just taking it out.
Yeah.
But, like, this kind of cancer is really, it spreads quick, it's aggressive, it's, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not, going in and trying to take out what's there isn't going to do that much good. The tumor formed in basically, like, 8 days or something.
Yeah, because, like, I took her to the vet 10 days apart initially to get, like, the initial readings or whatever and found out, like, she was very dehydrated. She had the bladder infection. She was constipated. They found the crystals in her urine, and they gave me... I've been having to inject her with fluids every night, which, honestly, she doesn't hate. Like, she hates taking the medicine way more than getting stabbed with a needle every night. But it's kind of wild that they just let me do that.
Right.
It's like, okay. I mean, they showed me how, obviously. And it's really not hard at all. She doesn't even flinch when you
stick it in there.
Yeah.
I would have thought...
Yeah, because what was it, last week, Kristen came over, and I was like, you see the IV bag hanging off the door? And she's like, yeah, what's going on with that?
That's not usually there.
Yeah, that's for the cat. And so...
With Karen, it could have been a Halloween decoration. I wasn't gonna rule it out.
You know, you're not wrong.
I didn't know. Like, yeah. We got plans to know. Come to find out, it was for Kelly.
Yeah, and so, you know... When we found out it was basically the crystals and we'd have to, like, change her diet, I was like, okay, not awesome, but, like, we can deal with this. Like, it's just a kind of a part of the chronic kidney disease anyway. And then I went back 10 days later to do a follow-up because I'd gone through, like, most of the medicine at that point, and they just wanted to see how she was doing. And she had, like, gained half a pound. She was way less dehydrated. She was definitely more herself. And the vet did another scan and was like, so if her bladder's the size of a lemon, the tumor's the size of a golf ball. And it wasn't there 10 days ago.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
So I was like, okay, what do we do now?
Right.
And then, you know.
They give you all the advice, the best you can do.
Yeah.
You know,
and, I mean, I really trust my vet. She seems very knowledgeable. And, you know, she walked me through, like, everything. And it's just, you know, it's just about keeping Callie happy now. So.
Which, again, princess treatment.
Yeah.
She gets salmon made directly, only for her.
Literally, and I'm making salmon right now, and I'm not going to eat any of it. It is literally just for her. But, you know, she deserves it. I've had her for 5 years. You know, I got her kind of secondhand.
Yes, we did. You kind of rescued her in a way, I guess.
Yeah, she
from a family that was just not...
They had, like, dogs and stuff, and she, I don't, knowing her now, like, she does not like being around other animals and stuff, so, she definitely liked, I think, the apartment and just having the two of us, and then when she moved here, when I moved in with my boyfriend, she had, you know, the whole run of the house,
right?
And it's a lot quieter than it was in the apartment, and, like, she really kind of started thriving here, I feel like.
Yeah.
So she's been a good kitty for the last 5 years, and while I never expected that it would be over this soon, you know, especially when I got the chronic kidney disease, I thought I had prepared myself mentally. I have not. I'm still trying to not think about it too much, but I did want to let you guys know. And I'll keep you updated because I feel like you guys, at this point, if you've been listening to us for this long, you kind of know Callie. I've posted her on the account before. And
she's made guest appearances.
Yeah. her litter box has made guest appearances.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah. So she will live on in infamy in the podcast.
That is for sure.
Yeah. So hopefully everything from here on out is better news. Like, you know, the podcast, the rest of the episode will be happier
later
than that. Yeah, than that discussion. I meant to post about someone's birthday the other day, and then life has just been chaos.
Hey, I understand life being chaos.
Yeah, so, you know, happy belated birthday to Kristen. We did hang out the next day.
We did, yeah. Which was very nice.
Yeah, it was great.
It was a very nice afternoon. No, my birthday has come and gone, and it was uneventful, but also super eventful, because my niece, who was not supposed to be born until mid-October, actually was born on my birthday. So now I have a birthday buddy.
That's pretty cool.
And two babies, one on either side of my family. So my brother has his little girl. She's just about 3.5, 4 months now. And then, like, a week and a half old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yes.
Do you think they're going to be best friends?
I mean, that would be fun.
It would be fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how all that shakes out in the future. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, so It's been really, you know, fun kind of seeing his brother become a dad, and
mm-hmm.
he clicked into, like, dad mode. It was so funny, like, watching him parade everybody around and, like, you know, tell him about his daughter, and, like, it's really cute. Like,
that's awesome.
We actually bought him a dad outfit, like, a first-time dad outfit to wear when he brought her home,
mm-hmm.
and it had a white visor, a red striped polo, jorts, some nice jean shorts,
oh my God.
A braided belt, a fanny pack,
oh my
some
God.
White New Balances, and the tall white socks with the red, white, and blue stripes on them.
Oh, my God.
Oh yeah. He looked fantastic. It was hilarious.
Wow.
His fiance, who, she kind of gave us his sizes so that we'd have everything right,
mm-hmm.
and she forgot that he lost much weight, so the shorts were, like,
really? That's even funnier, honestly.
Right. So he was like, I'm really glad you guys included the belt, or this
yeah.
would have been very interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, it ended up being really funny. He took pictures when they brought her home from the hospital in that outfit.
That's
he wore
amazing.
It home.
Also, can I just interrupt really quickly to say, I have a personal vendetta against visors, and I don't care who knows it, because, and Kevin and his brother and his best friend have been low-key not really making fun of me, because they do agree with me, but they keep prodding the joke. Is it Kirby Smith, Georgia's head coach?
Oh.
His first name's Kirby.
Okay.
It's Kirby Smith.
It's possible.
He looks like a sleazy used car salesman, and it's because of his visor and his floppy hair on top of it, and I just hate it so much. I root against Georgia because of that alone, because I don't know enough about them.
I completely don't know who you're talking about, because
okay.
I don't follow college football as well as yeah, I know you and Kevin especially
yeah.
is very into college football. So I don't really know him, but, like, Ted Lasso wears a visor, and I like it.
Okay, you know what? Ted Lasso can wear it.
But he's Ted Lasso. Maybe we just like it because he's Ted. And Ted can get away with it. I don't know. But yeah, visors are, it's a little
yeah,
touch and go. They sometimes, if you are kind of a jerk, they just make you look like more of a jerk.
Yeah, and I feel like, because last night, they called timeout for Georgia, and he was like, I wasn't doing timeout, I was clapping. And it was like, you were doing timeout. Like, everybody knows what
Get
you
out.
Were doing. and they gave it to him. Like, they
gave
were like,
timeout
okay.
back.
Yeah. They were like, okay, that's fine. And I will say, I'm trying to find actually, I can show you the douchiest picture of him, because Kevin's friend sent it and was like, is this Karen's favorite picture of Kirby?
Oh, boy.
And this is specifically about the, oh, wait, it's Kirby Smart, not
Smart,
Kirby Smith.
Okay.
See, I don't even care. This is specifically about him and the whole timeout debacle.
Oh, yeah, no.
Doesn't he look smarmy?
Yeah.
Hate it.
No, don't have
anyway.
To. Yeah.
But I will say, women in visors, amazing.
Totally different.
Love it. Apparently, visors were made for women.
I mean,
like,
it would
their
make
ponytails
sense.
And stuff.
It would make logical
yeah.
sense. Yes.
So men just shouldn't wear it. Anyway, that's my high horse for today.
No worries. No, but she was born on my birthday, so our plans for my birthday kind of had to get shoved to the side so that we can go spend all day in a hospital
yeah.
waiting for her to appear. But it was fun getting to, you know, share my birthday with her and, like, all that. And it'll continue to be fun for the rest of my life. So yesterday we decided to enact our plan. So we went to Dayton.
Good.
To the Dollar Book Swap, which I will say was slightly underwhelming as far as, like, the selection.
Okay.
A lot of older stuff, if you're ever looking for, like, really old romance or really old, like, fantasy, that
How
sort of thing.
Nora Roberts was there.
A lot.
Yeah.
Like, a lot. I think she had her own section, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah. So, a lot of older books. I will say, for teachers, anyone looking for YA stuff, they had quite a bit of YA and, like, you know, middle grade, entry level, like, that sort of stuff. Like, new readers stuff. Tons and tons of books for those. And lots of kids' books, too.
Mm.
I did pick up some for my brand new nieces. I picked up a couple of books for each of them. And, I found, like, one or two things that I was interested in. But for the most part, the stock is a little older there. But again, yeah, if you're looking for, like, YA or if you've got a new chapter book reader, they had so much for that age group. So really valuable resource for a lot of people, just wasn't quite what I had in mind. But my loving husband did a little bit of research before we went, and he found three other used bookstores in Dayton that we could go to. And I was going to try and basically get to all of them or one or two of them. I ended up only really going to Half Price Books.
Oh, okay.
Which I love. There is zero reason we should not have a Half Price Books up here. I'm so mad that the nearest three are in North Olmsted, which is near Cleveland, Fort Wayne, which is in Indiana, and in Dayton.
Yeah.
Like, they don't go any further north than that. It's like, that's where they stopped. I'm like, there's none in Michigan. Like, why is there not one in Ann Arbor or something like that? So,
yeah.
My mission is going to be to write them many, many letters and be like, please put one in Toledo. Please put one in Southern Michigan. There's no reason for this.
Yeah.
I need this because I got like 6 or 7 books for $50 at Half Price Books. I was so excited by some of my purchases, like some new stuff, some new authors, stuff that I hadn't heard of before or that I had seen in passing and not really known what it was about. But they just had such a great selection and prices were really great. And then they also had new stuff that was priced, you know, pretty well. So I'm officially in love with Half Price Books. I know you can order stuff online, but with used stuff, I want to see it if I can.
Yeah,
so it's
that's
like,
fair.
You know, so I don't know, but it was a very successful trip. It was fun. We ate at an old firehouse that they had changed into a restaurant, and like the upstairs is like a party room. And then the downstairs.
So you were going to say the upstairs is where the Ghostbusters are?
No, but that would be amazing. The upstairs is like a party room. The main floor is like the restaurant. They have like a stage set up because there's a good amount of space, like an actual. And then like, yeah, it was just really cool. It was themed with like all the firefighters' stuff and like.
That's cool.
Old firefighter antiques and stuff, which was kind of neat. And the food was pretty good. And yeah, so it was a really nice day. We just kind of day tripped, went down in the morning, came back, and
I haven't been to Dayton yet, but every time I see, like, a cool tattoo artist, I swear they're always in Dayton.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that doesn't really help me, but that's fine.
It's a little bit of a trek. It's just over 2 hours from here to get down there. So it's like, it's not a short drive, but it's also not, like, super long. It was totally doable for a day trip. And then we came home last night and went and saw Roofman with my brother.
Was it good?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
It was a really interesting story.
Yeah.
It's not as funny as the trailers make it out to be, but it's just a really kind of fascinating story.
Okay.
And Channing Tatum is really good in it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's basically doing his kind of like Channing Tatum thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not, he's slightly misunderstood, kind of off kilter, you know, but charming guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And in this case, a criminal. But,
yeah.
You know, not a like, I'm going to stab you criminal. Like,
not everyone could be
like,
perfect.
I just need money
kind
of criminal. So, but no, honestly, really fascinating. And at the end, they, like, show you some of the, like, news footage of the actual, because it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
They show you some of the news footage from the actual case. And it's like, wow, like, that all happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Really
cool
movie, though.
Good. We were thinking about going to see that, so.
Yeah.
I was like having your stamp of approval.
Yeah, it was. We were either going to see that or The Long Walk.
Okay.
Because that looks fascinating, too. Yeah. And Running Man isn't out yet, which I'm actively excited for. Yeah, it looks so good.
I do want to see that pretty badly. I really want to see Good Boy, the dog movie, the dog horror movie.
Yeah.
I've heard so many good things about it, and I didn't realize it took them like 4 or 6 years to film that.
Wow.
Because it's the director's dog, and they just would shoot like all day and get like a minute of footage or something like that. They just wanted like, it was all very naturally done.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, that's just really cool. But I've been hearing really, really good things about it. And even though I'm a little scaredy cat, I do love the concept of horror movies. I just jump very easily and then get embarrassed because I'm like, just calm down, Karen.
The other movie that I must admit to being very excited about is Anaconda. Have you seen anything about this?
Yeah, I think I saw I think I saw the trailer because Jack Black's in it. Yeah. And who's
Paul Rudd?
Yes, okay. Yes, because they want to remake the movie. And yes. I think it actually looks really good.
It looks like insane and ridiculous, like, and I'm so excited. Yeah, I can't but
like,
even
ridiculous in a good way, kinda like shoot. It's one of Kevin's favorite movies. I always want to call it Without a Paddle, and it's not Without a Paddle. It's the one with Robert Downey Jr. and blackface.
Oh, Tropic Thunder.
Yes, yeah, Tropic Thunder, yes. Which, like, God, I hate that that movie is funny. I don't want to admit that I like it, but, like, it knows what it's doing.
It does.
And another Jack Black movie.
Right,
which,
yep.
You know, he's ridiculous, but you just kind of got to love it.
I'm honestly very much looking forward to that one, too. It just seems the right kind of stupid.
Yeah.
And it's got, like, Steve Zahn in it, who's hilarious, and, yeah.
Meanwhile, I know we're going on for a while about this intro section.
Life has been a little crazy.
Meanwhile, did you see the trailer for Playdate?
Yes.
Starring Kevin James and Alan Rickman. Why is he... Why are they in a movie together? And why is Kevin James the straight man in the movie?
I don't know.
It's so weird. It does not look like it's going to be good, but I'm, like, fascinated anyway.
I have a fascination with terrible movies with really strong guys doing really weird things. Like, I loved Tooth Fairy with The Rock.
I knew you were gonna
say, I also loved The Pacifier with Vin Diesel. Oh my gosh, I love that movie so much. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. He's there to protect the family, so he's playing the nanny, basically.
Yeah.
And he's teaching a kid how to sing for Sound of Music. And so they're like, it's like a whole thing. And Brad Garrett is a terrible vice principal who... Yeah, anyway, it's so funny. I love that movie. So there's this thing where I have this affinity for giant men who are very muscly, who are just protective and acting ridiculous about it. Like, there's just something about that. It hits. I don't care how good or terrible the movie is.
I kind of want to see it, but also I don't expect it to be good. So I guess low expectations.
My husband is very excited about it, so we can watch it, and I'll let you know if it's worth it.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling as soon as it's out, we will be seeing it, because he thinks it looks absolutely hysterical.
Oh my
goodness. We are both very big Reacher fans, so Alan Ritchson can do no wrong. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very good Reacher and a very attractive man.
I mean, that's true, too.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, if you would like to talk to us about your pets, please, I would love to see pictures of them, how much you hate visors, like me, books and movies, any good books you read lately, any good movies you want to see, you can contact us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You could also talk to us about Percy Jackson and the King Chronicles if you want. And we do have a couple pieces of news this week, so take it away, Kristen.
Yeah, so not any big stuff, unfortunately, but if you head over to Instagram and you check out, I believe it's Percy Films, they have 6 new character posters from season 2. They look really cool. I love what they did with these. The color scheme. It's just basically like a wall of water behind them, but it's like active water, so it's got all the different like angles and shiny bits and all that behind them. But we get basically all of our main characters. So Percy, Annabeth, Grover, Luke, Clarice, and then, of course, Tyson.
Isn't his name on the poster?
Is it?
Or did they... You can also find them at the Percy series, the official page, and they have them, like... The one she has them, like, in a grid all together, and the official page has them, like, individual, so you can, like, click through them.
Gotcha.
They have the names on it. I don't know if they cut them off of the other ones.
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you end up going to Percy Films, wherever we end up linking it, if you go to Percy Films, if you kind of scroll down, you can see them in full size, like on a wall, and the names are on the poster. So you see Grover, Percy, Annabeth, yada, yada. Those are huge, and I love the size of them. Those posters are at NYCC.
Oh, okay.
Which is this weekend, which was this past weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But there's also a group poster. With our three heroes. And again, it's just very like active water. Percy's holding Riptide. Annabeth's got her dagger. Yeah. And there's definitely some like tentacle behind them. Some tentacle action.
Yeah.
But other than that, like it doesn't really give anything new away or anything crazy like that, I don't think.
That one I think might be old.
Okay.
I think that I couldn't remember. Ones,
yeah. I couldn't remember if we had seen the group poster or not yet, but in case we missed it or didn't post it before, we'll link to it in the show notes so you guys can see that. And I will actually link to it in the show notes this time. While I was looking around for news and fun things, I did stumble across on Rick's Instagram. There's a picture of him with our new Zoe Nightshade with Sara Chaudhry. She's holding a copy of Titan's Curse that is heavily annotated with Post-its, and she has called them her Zoe-isms, and she's marked them out.
That's awesome.
I just thought that was really great, and honestly, the look on her face, like, the attitude, it just gave me Zoe, and I was like, okay, I'm really excited to see what she does with this. Like, yeah. I just thought that was fun. Also, behind them, they're standing, like, clearly on set behind, like, a blank... the back of a thing, and it says Wild Wall. I don't know if that means it's, like, just a, like, a plant wall, because they have those.
Right.
Or if that, like, means something to this set. I don't know.
Yeah. I've been seeing too many Taylor Swift TikToks where they're like, look at all of these clues she put in all of these places. So now I'm thinking there are Easter eggs everywhere. And while Rick, like, has done or would do some of those things, not nearly on the level of Taylor Swift, but yeah, I'm like, what does it mean?
Right.
Maybe it doesn't mean anything.
It might not. It might just be that this wall, like, has something on it. Like, they don't move it because it's the Wild Wall. Like, it, you know, you don't want to mess with it. I don't know. But it's funny. And so, therefore, we share. Okay, so the next item that I found was a really fun little behind-the-scenes video about the kids working with the stunt team for season 2. It's just kind of a clip reel of particularly Walker and Leah. We also got a little bit of Clarice, too. Whose name is evading me. But yes, so it is fun to just kind of see the kids in action. Leah's really excited to get to do a stunt. I don't know exactly which one. We get some footage of her kind of being dragged around a little bit, so it might have been that one.
I remember they talked a lot last season about how good Walker is at the stunts.
Yeah.
So he really loves doing it, so that's awesome.
And he looked pretty great in his footage, too. He's doing some flips and... some sword fighting and that sort of stuff. So just a cute little video in case you were interested. All right. So that pretty much wraps up what we have for the show stuff. I didn't see any new news or anything, nothing out of NYCC that I noticed. If I do see anything in the coming days, if there's things that just, you know, kind of got hidden from us, we'll definitely talk about them on the next episode. But seems pretty quiet from NYCC this year. So we'll just let that slide right on by. Rick and Mark did get the book tour underway and is now complete. And we have some stuff to share from one of our listeners later, so we'll get to that then. But Steph Lurie did share a few photos here and there during the tour, and there's one specific one that I just thought was really funny from the Texas Book Festival. She is dressed up like a skeleton I guess. And they apparently did like a Judgment Day thing where Rick and Mark were like put on trial, and it's a whole thing.
That's really funny. She dressed up at the last one that I went to as well, and yeah, like she's really great at doing that kind
of
stuff.
She has a lot of fun, and that is really what matters, is just having a good time. But yeah, that made me giggle. And again, we'll get into a little bit more about the tour later. We are really grateful to one of our listeners for sharing some of the details of what happened. So, last thing on the happy news parade is Virginia Call, our very own Mama Jackson, had her birthday on 10/6. So,
nice.
Happy birthday to her. I do not know how old she is. I don't think she cares or wants us to know. So, we'll just wish her a happy birthday and keep moving right along.
Good job.
That pretty much wraps up the news section, and yeah, we'll keep an eye out for things coming up. I mean, it's we're getting to right around mid-October with the show coming out in December, especially early December. I would expect a full-fledged trailer.
We're under 2 months now.
Right? Like, we should be getting a full trailer here pretty soon. Like, yeah. It's gotta be coming.
Excited. But before we can get to that, we need to keep talking about the Red Pyramid, because we are almost done with this book. So and close. Like we said, these two chapters were pretty hefty. A lot happens. I do kind of think they could have been broken up a little bit. At least the second one, I feel like, could have been, but, you know.
Agreed a little bit, yeah.
But they were still fantastic chapters. So we're doing 39 and 40 today. And just a little mini recap to remind everyone where we left off. Carter becomes one with Horus and battles Set, while Sadie looks after Zia and Amos, both of whom are injured. Outside the pyramid, the House of Life shows up to offer support, but it's too little too late. Set places the capstone on top of the pyramid, but wait! Sadie emerges in a rainbow haze to shout a name that might turn the tides. And we do find out what the name is, and it's nowhere near what I had guessed it to be. So let's start off with chapter 39, Zia Tells Me a Secret. And I gotta say, a lot of twists and turns in these last two chapters really made up for the whole
and
Set
a lot going
reveal.
On. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Sadie backs up the story and tells us her part was not as glamorous or as dramatic as Carter made it seem. And I just want to pause again. We've talked about this a few times. I really love this form of storytelling for the series. It works so well for their different personalities, and the fact that like each of them takes two chapters and they're like talking into a recording device and everything. Like, it just, I don't know. I haven't read a lot of books like this, and I think it just works particularly well with these two characters.
Well, and I gotta say, every time they make this switch from like a Carter section to a Sadie section, like, you get this reminder that it's post all of this, and they're talking about it, they're talking to each other or into it. Yeah. Once you get past that first, like, paragraph, you are thrown right back into whatever action.
Yeah.
And it seems seamless every time. Like, I never question, like, oh, okay, now she's getting back into it. Like, no, it's just, it flows. And so, yeah, it's a really well-handled tool from Rick to be able to tell the story from the two different perspectives and make it really seamless.
And especially because, like, him, like, her being British and him being, like, more American, like, you know, he did a really good job separating that and giving her different words to use, the words that she would use having grown up in London and everything. And yeah, like, even though they make some comments where, like, you know that they're talking kind of like Sadie's talking to Carter in the moment as they're recording it, it doesn't take away from, like, keeping you right in the action, which is, I mean, great storytelling on his part.
Definitely.
So Sadie kind of abandons Amos in exchange for trying to help Zia, since she has actual visible wounds, because her uncle's wounds are more magical. There's really nothing going on the outside. She can't do anything for him right now.
Yeah.
And Zia stops her and says, Carter needs your help. And this is the only thing that will get Sadie to leave Zia's side, which I really loved. I mean, I think that's huge growth for Sadie. She, not only because she's like, no, I need to help you, blah, 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 but also her worrying about Carter and wanting to save him. She talks a little bit later, I want to say in this chapter, it could be the next one. I think it is the next one. Basically about how they're a family, and it's the only family they have now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have their uncle, I guess, but he has become very important to her in a very short amount of time, and I really love seeing that.
Yeah.
So we find out that Zia is not Nephthys, but she speaks for Nephthys. And my question here is, how does that work? Which we will find out later. And that was probably, that was maybe the biggest twist of this book, I think.
I mean, there are two big ones right here at the end, and this is number one.
Yeah.
We've been trying for, I feel like, weeks to figure out how Zia can be Zia, but also Nephthys, but not Nephthys.
Mm-hmm.
And Nephthys is super not present in that Set couldn't even sense her. Like, he knew she was linked somehow, but couldn't sense her actual presence. So it's like, how is any of that possible? What is going on here? And yeah, we don't get the answer right this second, but the actual twist for that is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. We also find out Set's name is Evil Day, so not Toilet Monger or whatever we had, you know, come up with last time. Did you find this to be a bit anticlimactic?
I mean, that's one of the things. When you set up a character's name to be, like, the ultimate secret,
yeah,
it's always going to be a letdown.
I mean, that's true.
It's almost always going to be a letdown. And, like, it almost is more fun, the idea of the secret is more fun than the actual name.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that there's a top secret name that as soon as you learn it gives you power over them is, like, that's the fun part. The actual name ends up being superfluous. Like,
yeah.
We love Styles.
Yeah.
And as much as we love Mr. Stilinski himself, learning his actual name was like, oh, so that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, we knew that it was hard to spell. We knew that people took one look at it and went, huh?
Yeah.
But, like, you know, when we finally learn his name,
that's a really good comparison.
Yeah. Like, it's a little bit of a letdown because it's like, oh, okay, you really want it to, like, measure up. But it's almost more fun to just have this secret than it is the actual secret.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's anticlimactic, but it was fun to have the secret of this secret name will be his undoing.
Yeah. And I think, like, the secret name makes sense. It is kind of spooky and, you know, kind of makes you go, oh, man, his secret name is Evil Day. Like, that because the day he was born was an evil day. Like, that's pretty heavy. But I think I would have liked it if it was a little bit more of, like, a title, like a little bit longer kind of thing, but ultimately it doesn't really matter.
Also, who sets these second names?
I,
like, do they just magically kind of come into being and Nephthys just knows what it is? Like, you know,
Good question.
Right?
Good question.
This is a question. I would love it if Rick would answer it in the next two books. We'll find out.
I mean, that would be nice. But we do know that this is the way to bend Set to their will and make him help. Zia specifically says, make him help. And Sadie is sort of like, what do you mean by that? And Zia was like, you gotta go help Carter. And Sadie really wants to free her dad because he's still trapped in the coffin. He's still, you know, him and Osiris are still together. And Isis says there's no time for that, and you can't handle, like, what you're gonna see if you try to do that. And Sadie ends up putting her hand on the coffin and gets sucked into this, like, myriad of visions kind of thing.
Quick question before we talk about the visions. Is this what Isis didn't want her to see, or is what she would have seen if she tried to save him something even more dramatic than what she sees here?
I was thinking the second option.
Okay.
But I'm not 100%
sure. That was my question, because, like, what she sees here is pretty dramatic and life-changing for her. But, like, I also couldn't help but wonder if this was what Isis was trying to protect her from, or if there's something more she might have seen that would have been really devastating.
I do feel like this could be what Isis was trying to protect her from, just because it does not make Isis look good.
No.
And she didn't have enough faith in Sadie and really thought that this meant Sadie would not do what she needed to do. You know, which is on Isis for not believing in her, but
true story.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that this was actually it. And you're right. I mean, it is a doozy. Like, what she sees is, again, very heavy. That seems to be the theme of this episode. And so I also wanted to mention we totally lost track of our prophecy count because this book works a little bit differently than Percy Jackson. They're not usually, like, prophecies in the same way. They're more like memories sometimes. Sometimes they're just them going outside their body.
I was going to say, with the Boz, it's, yeah, like, active visions. Like, in Percy Jackson, we would call those prophecies.
Yeah.
Because it's Percy looking at something through a dream, and, like, it almost feels like a prophecy. But, like, here, it feels like an active part of the story because, right, they're actively going to see it, even if it's in their Ba.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it's, you know, we kind of dropped the ball there, but, yeah, meh, that's okay. Okay, so first she sees Anubis, the cutie, who's in the Hall of Judgment, and he says the throne cannot be empty. And my first thought is Sadie going to be Queen of the Dead? Because that would be kind of awesome.
I will say, there's a point coming up here in this chain of visions that I thought there was a chance that, like, it was going to be, like, Sadie and Carter. Like, Sadie is of the dead, and Carter is, like, almost the raw, like, figure.
Right.
So they were kind of, like, opposites, but also the balance. And I was like, is that how this is going to work? Like, yeah.
I do like that idea, like, it has to be balanced somehow.
Right. The two siblings kind of with their two personalities. Yeah. And Carter's always been a little sunnier than Sadie. And, like, it would make some sense. Like, I totally thought that was a plausible option at one point, yeah, but we quickly keep moving and...
Yeah. Yeah, because then she appears in the throne room of the gods, and Bass tells her not to let her die in vain, that if Set doesn't take over, someone else must. And I think it was really great that Sadie got to see Bast here, but it was so quick. Like, she didn't even... I think she even gets cut off when she was like, I didn't even get to say goodbye. And then Bast is like, yeah, never mind that. And then she's off to the other place, you know, the next place.
Yeah.
So then she goes to the Hall of Ages back in Egypt and sees Iskandar, and he says Mont demands a leader, and Sadie's like, too many thrones, which, agreed, like, how many thrones are there? Do we have enough people for this?
Right? Like, come on.
And she specifically says that Carter can't do it all on his own, and Iskandar replies that he won't be alone, that this is her family's burden, that, quote, the Canes alone will heal us or destroy us. Which, I mean, is a pretty awesome quote, but also these are, like, 13, 14-year-old kids, like...
It's a lot.
Give them a break! Both their parents are gone.
You guys are either gonna save us or destroy us. Good luck! Like, and we're not gonna show you how to help either way. We're not gonna guide you anywhere. You just gotta figure it out.
And then the next thing we're gonna do is show you the vision of the last moments of your mother's life.
Yay!
So they're at the Needle, and it's literally right before everything goes wrong. And we kind of find out, I feel like we got hints of this information throughout the book, but this is kind of a confirmation of everything that was actually going on. Her mom was communing with Isis, which obviously at that time was a big deal. I mean, it's still a big deal, but, like, she was going against the house. I mean, she was doing what you are not supposed to do.
Well, and it was more than, like, even Sadie and Carter who were hosting them, and it was kind of like they didn't have a choice. It kind of happened to them.
Yeah.
Her mom, like, actively sought out Isis and was communing with her and finding, you know, trying to learn from Isis what they needed to deal with the coming storm. So it's like... She definitely crossed the line as far as, like, the magicians and the House of Life go. Like, she crossed the line, but it was necessary, probably, hopefully. Mm-hmm. We'll find out more.
Yeah. Julius, in that moment, wants her to seek the goddess's advice again before they do what they're about to do. But Ruby, Sadie's mom, says she can't risk doing it again, that she knows her limits. And this part is very important in the next chapter, so I was going to say,
very cryptic in the moment, but it becomes pretty important in about, you know, 5-10 minutes when you read the next chapter.
Yeah, and this whole part, like, I feel like even after these visions and into the next chapter, Sadie learns more about this moment in particular and, like, what's going on here. Because right after this, she returns to the present. And this was, like, I understand. I think this was a necessary part of the chapter to get the information and to get, like, Sadie's motivation going and realizing, like, what actually is at stake and what needs to be done. but it was also like, yeah. I mean, all those little moments could have been their own chapter in a way. Like, if you wanted to extend it a little bit, it was just, it was a lot of information at once.
Agreed, definitely.
And she has a pretty, what I would say, normal reaction to seeing all of this. She blames ISIS for killing her mother. And I'm not even mad at her about that. I mean, no. I don't think it was actually ISIS's fault, but...
her mom is ultimately dead because of what ISIS told her and the actions her mom took because of what ISIS shared with her. So it's like... It, as much as, it, like, you know, her mom had the agency, made the choice, it wasn't like she was killed by ISIS, but, like, ISIS had a hand in her mom's undoing. And
yeah.
It, yeah.
And just to add salt to the wound, Julius appears in spectral form. They didn't really say, like, if this was his ba, if this was his ghost, if this was... He literally, Rick writes something about it being, like, a projection of the light glinting off of the coffin... So maybe like, I mean, not quite an iris message, obviously, but it's something where like, yes, this is him in real time talking to her, but he's not solid or anything.
Yeah.
And he tells her not to blame ISIS, that Ruby was doing what she thought was right with the information that she had. And Sadie pretty much immediately says, I hate you, and then feels super guilty about it. And this was one of the, I think, rawest and realest reactions that Sadie has had so far. She's a very emotional person. And I feel like she does kind of hate her dad. And she does kind of not hate her dad at the same time. Like, I get that it's just so much is being thrown at her at once that she is just a hurricane of emotions.
Well, and Julius's reaction to it is ultimately, like, the best possible reaction.
It really
because
is.
Because not only did his only daughter, only real connection to, you know, his wife, just tell him she hates him, but, like, he looks at her and says, I know, but what you're gonna do next, you have to be doing... not out of the anger you're feeling toward me. So I know you had to say it, and it's okay. Like,
yeah.
You can be mad. You're allowed to be mad. Everything that's happened sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And you're 12 or 13. You don't deserve to be going through all of this. Like, he very quickly is able to level with her and be like, it's terrible. And you're allowed to be mad at me for it because you didn't have a choice in this. And it was what had to be done. And your mom and I did what we had to do. And... you know, and now it's all on you, and I understand if you're mad. Like, you're allowed.
Yeah. I mean, telling her not to apologize, that she's allowed to feel that way, that he completely understands. I mean, even as, like, a grown adult, like, has to be very hard when your child says something like that to you. I mean, you know that they don't really mean it necessarily, but, like, it still hurts your feelings, you know?
And it's, like, at the same time, like, I think he knew she meant it. Not like, I hate you forever and always and, you know, I don't want anything to do with you. Like, it's more like, I hate everything you did to put me where I am.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This was all you. Why are we doing this? Why couldn't we just be a happy family? Why do we have to be the ones? Like, you know, there is no other word for it. Like, it's rage, it's anger, it's hate, it's... I don't want to do any of this, and I have to. It's like...
Yeah.
So I like that he is more than willing to kind of shoulder it and say, I know you do,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay. And you're going to have to set that aside for what's coming next. And you know... But you know... I know that you mean it, and you also don't mean it at the same time.
Yeah. And thankfully, he does also offer some... information. He explains that Ruby was a diviner and knew that chaos was rising, that the house wasn't ready, which again, we kind of already knew this information, but kind of setting it out again with a little more detail was helpful. And he also specifically says that she wasn't strong enough to host ISIS herself, so she released Bast and then sealed the breach with the last of her power, and that's what ultimately killed her. And we also... And so, okay, this is before we got more information later, but I was like, this is so interesting. Like, we kind of know Zia isn't hosting Nephthys, so it must be the same way that Ruby was communing with Isis, which we find out it wasn't.
Yeah.
And Amos, I think, was the more interesting one because he, quote-unquote, hosted Set, which should have killed him. And, I mean, it did kind of burn him up, so I think that was, like, part of it. But also, Set wasn't in his full form.
Yeah.
So I think that was another important distinction.
When it's, like, Ruby, it in my head, the way I kind of reason it out is, like, she was never hosting Isis. She communed with Isis.
Mm-hmm.
And she quickly realized that if she allowed Isis any more control over her mind or body than she had at that time, that she wouldn't have been able to control what was... Like, it wouldn't have been the perfect blend that both Carter and Sadie have been able to have with Isis and Horus. Like,
right.
It's not that, like... It's almost like they needed both sides of the family to literally be in their blood in order to have the power to not only host a god, but, like, be a perfect balance for
mm-hmm.
that god. So it's like, Ruby, unfortunately, didn't have what was necessary to really be able to harness it. The kids, with having both parents and the power from both family lines kind of come together, means that... That, you know, the Kane blood, the family, is the linchpin. Like, that's the thing
yeah.
you really needed to be able to do everything and actually host a god and not just be run over and taken over by it. And,
yeah. And he says Sadie and Carter have the strongest blood of any Kane in 3,000 years, that they can heal the breach between magician and god and relearn the old ways. And I also think it's very interesting because Osiris is inside Julius right now. And obviously we know what happens to Julius. So, like, I don't think either way he was really getting out of this now that we have all the information. But I am curious if him being in that coffin kind of saved his life in a way. Like, obviously in the end it didn't matter, but he was also going to burn up, just like Amos did. So,
mm-hmm.
it was going to be bad either way.
Yeah.
Not a good fate.
No.
Not one I would want, anyway.
No.
Sadie obviously wants her dad to help, but he says he's set the stage and that it's her stage. It's her time to shine. And I really loved this moment. I'll talk about it a little bit more because I'm pretty sure I put it down as my favorite moment. But his... self-sacrifice for his child, especially given their strained relationship in the beginning, is really beautiful to me. Like, he basically did the hardest thing he could do, which was keep the kids separate, not have a relationship with his daughter, also that they could save the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a lot to put on Sadie and Carter's shoulders, but I think Julius also carried a lot of that burden himself.
Oh, yeah. Especially once Ruby died.
Yeah.
Like, he had to find a way to keep Sadie alive and happy and well without being able to be present for most of her life because he needed Carter to have the knowledge he could teach him and... You know, it's like, yeah, he had to manage two children without actually being able to be there for one of them. And
mm-hmm.
and the other, as close as he felt to his dad, also feels like, you know, he never really knew everything about his dad because
yeah.
his dad had to keep all kinds of secrets. And yeah, so it's... Julius definitely carried a very large burden himself. Like, it's not the same burden the kids are going to be dealing with and carrying now, but... It was a very different, but still very heavy burden.
Yeah, definitely. And the other kind of burden there is that if she frees her father, the pyramid will consume Osiris, because that's kind of what it's built to do, and only make Set stronger. So she literally cannot free him from the coffin, and she has to destroy the whole pyramid, which includes sacrificing her father in the process. And that kind of comes back around to what Anubis asked her. What everybody's been asking her is, like, would you sacrifice your father, your family, to save the world? And looks like she's going to have to answer that
right.
question.
Yeah.
So she harnesses her resolve. her anger, her grief, and she merges with Isis. And this part hit me really hard. She could also feel Ruby's final moments like an imprint in Isis's mind. Are you kidding? That is, oh my God, that is just so much. Yeah. I don't want to keep using the word heavy because we used it like 26 times already, but like it really is very heavy.
It is. It's just such a, it's a weighty premise.
Yes. How many synonyms?
It's the same word, but different.
Yeah.
Like it's just such a, it's a heavy, it's a weighty premise to like think about. Your mom communed with the goddess that's currently inside of you. That goddess knows your mother probably better than any being on the planet at the time. Except maybe your dad who's in a coffin and about to die. And so it's like,
God.
Right? So it's like, you're sitting there like, I have to merge with this goddess. And I don't think she knew before it happened. But like, once it happened, it's like, oh, and there's everything that I never knew about my mom, all the things that happened in her final moments, like, it's all there. And it's like, yeah, that there's no other word for that but heavy. It just makes everything about your existence just fall on your shoulders. And it's like, oof.
Also, I just looked over at the box of my author copies with the sticker heavy on it. So apparently that really is the theme.
The word of the day.
Yeah, it really is. But everything will be okay because Sadie has a plan. Sadie and Isis have a plan. Isis,
plans are good.
No, they're not good either. You can't combine them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all bad.
Sadisis. No, that sounds like a disease. Okay. So, favorite lines, favorite moments. What was your favorite line?
Mine is literally the first line of the chapter where Sadie says, "Cheers, Carter, for making me look dramatic and all that. The truth was a bit less glamorous."
Yeah, I did like that opening line.
It is perfect because we were literally like, here comes Sadie, like, yeah! Like, we were all pumped up at the end of the chapter, and then she's like, okay, so maybe it wasn't quite that, like, yay. Yeah. Like, let me show you what I just went through. Like, oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine, obviously, hit me kind of hard this week in particular, but I also love this because I feel that it's 100% true. It's when Bass says, oh, don't be sad. Cats don't do regret. And so true. If ever a creature never regretted a thing they did, it was cats.
No. They, yeah. They don't do regret.
What was your favorite moment?
I think it's Sadie moving from, like, raging at Isis and being really pissed at finding out Isis's role in her mom's death. In a matter of moments, she goes from rage to reluctant understanding, which, again, we've talked about this time and time again, is a... It's a huge departure from the Sadie we met at the beginning of this book.
Very mature
like
for her to do this.
She's handling this better than any 12 or 13 year old ever should. And she's listening and feeling and allowing all of this to just roll through her and is able to harness, like, okay, I'm allowed to be mad that my mom died. I'm allowed to be mad about how she died. I'm also not allowed to let that run my being at the moment, because if I don't buck up and get up there, my brother's gonna die. And that's not gonna help anybody.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like, she knows what she has to do. She knows that accepting that Isis wasn't responsible for her mother's death, even if she had a role in it, and, like, bringing herself back to center so that she can become one with Isis and fight Set and hopefully save Carter... It's just so much for her to have to handle. And, you know, the Sadie at the beginning of this book really couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But she's grown so much with her relationship to Carter and with everyone in the, you know, everything and all the situations they've been in. She's just learned a whole lot about herself and has come a long way.
Yeah, definitely. My favorite moment, honestly, this kind of surprised me, but I think it's Julius's pep talk. And I didn't realize until this moment, like, how angry I was at him for, like, putting the kids through this. And, I mean, I realized that he was doing it for the greater good. And I don't think he wanted to put his kids in this position. But he did abandon them in many ways, even before he took on Osiris. Like, you know, his daughter he had to leave behind. He was never completely truthful with his son. And you kind of realize during his pep talk, he knew what he was doing. He didn't want to do it, but it was the only option.
Yeah.
And you kind of realize how much he had to sacrifice in order to make sure that they lived and they became what they could become. And I was like, honestly, I don't know the timeline. I don't know at what point Rick was writing this, but this was him writing as a father.
Yeah.
And talking about what you're willing to sacrifice when you have kids. And I really love that for mm-hmm. him and for the characters and everything. It hit really hard. I feel like there was a lot of emotion behind that particular speech. And I was like, oh, all right, I forgive you. I mean, everything still sucks, but I do forgive you.
I think the thing that, you know, still bothers me a little, that still, you know, is unsettled in my little heart, is that, like, he made it seem, when he took them to the museum, like, he made it seem like no big deal.
Yeah.
Where in his heart of hearts, you know, he knew that there was a good chance that he was never going to see or speak to them again. Like, he got to speak to Sadie here, but, mm-hmm. like, he had no idea how this whole thing was going to shake out, and he had to have at least an inkling that he could end up completely comatose and incapable of sharing anything more with them from this moment on. And he didn't really do all that much to prepare them for any of that. And so that, like, that stings. Like, that, yeah. I know that some of it is necessary and all that, but it's like, there's also a part of me that's like, really? Like, that's a tough choice. That, yeah. Like, that was hard.
Yeah. I do agree with that. I think that, I don't know, the whole situation is really complicated, which I actually appreciate because I do think it makes for a more nuanced story.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. Like, he knew what was going to happen, essentially, and just did not I mean, how do you prepare your kids for that? You can't really, but
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, he did the best he could with Carter, but poor Sadie was left completely adrift.
Yeah.
So let's jump right in chapter 40, because again, these chapters are a lot. This one, I feel like, was even heftier, used another word, longer and weightier than the previous one. It's titled, I Ruin a Rather Important Spell, which I really liked the name of. So Sadie heads upstairs. Things are not going well. And I really loved her description here. She describes the scene she sees, like, from the perspective of a crocodile with eyes at water level, seeing both above and below the surface at the same time. In other words, she can see the Duat and the regular world simultaneously. And she can see actual Horus in the Duat as an actual falcon-headed warrior, and describes him in a really, like, kind of almost grisly, monstrous way. I think she talks about him having, like, blood-tipped talons and stuff like that. She also describes Set as a mountain of sand doused in petrol, set on fire, and spinning in the world's largest blender. Which, no thanks.
Yeah, let's just skip that.
That's his real form? No. Return to sender.
Agreed.
So then we get the moment that we saw the last time we discussed the chapters. She slams her stuff down onto the pyramid and shouts, Washington, D.C., which was not at all what I thought she was going to yell.
Nope.
But ends up being really smart because she summons a portal which devours everything and everyone and sends them all to the National Mall in D.C. So now they're out of the desert, which is Set's seat of power, and at the default gateway for North America, which is the Washington Monument, which is the seat of power for Mott and Balance, and it just strips Set of a lot of his power.
I love the minute she, like, declares it, Set, like, freaks out.
He's like, no!
Right? Like, you can see the no! Like, yeah. That moment was really like, ha, yeah, got it.
This book is just so like, visual to me. Like, I mean, I think Percy is too, but this book in particular, for some reason, I can just, like, see it on screen so easily, and I'm really excited.
I definitely know what you mean.
Yeah.
Because it, like, again, yes, I could envision Percy Jackson things, but, like, I don't know if it's that the show exists now, and so we're going to see things, and
right.
we've already seen some things, that my brain is less, like, visualizing all of that, and is more, like, anticipating what is it gonna look like. Whereas here, it's like, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see it. And I can see, like, the, you know, the scene, the bit where Set is like, it's not possible, you can't do that. And she's like, sure can. And then is like, you know, and there goes, they're in Washington, D.C.
This is a half-formed thought, but I almost wonder if it's the difference in storytelling, too. Because Percy is a bit more in his head. Whereas they're literally, like, telling you the story through a recording device. So, like, the way it's being described, I feel like, is maybe different. And their personalities,
point.
Like, come through a little bit in a different way.
Yeah.
So, that could also be why.
They're almost performing. Like,
yeah.
They're not performing. They're telling a story, and we're getting their pure thoughts. Like, we're feeling and
yeah.
all of that with them. But, like... they're telling the story.
Yeah.
So it's not just, what is going on? Do I do this? Do I do that? Like, they're giving us play-by-play. Yeah. It
yeah.
is a little different. Maybe
that
is what
why.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. I would be very interested to see how that translates on the screen. What
yeah.
they end up doing with it. Okay, so Carter fights Set while Sadie reads from the book. No, you mustn't read from the book. I just think about that every time we talk about books in this book. The pyramid begins to break apart, and then the spell starts to tear Set apart, too. And Ruby, her mom, kind of this talks to Sadie. It's sort of like an imprint, but also it's not quite real, but it's not not real. Ruby tells her to stay focused, to watch for her enemy. And as Sadie is about to trap Set forever, she looks up and sees a red river, rage-filled and writhing because it doesn't have enough power to coalesce without the destruction of an entire continent, because that's what Set was going to do when the pyramid was finished. Carter looks at Sadie with doubt because Sadie's hesitating. She's not finishing the spell. And it's almost like they're strangers again. And she hates it. She hates that look in his eye. She hates that it feels like they're back at the beginning when they first saw each other before everything happened.
It's like that last moment of doubt. Like, I've been able to trust you. I've trusted you. Why are you hesitating now? It's like, remind me that this is still, that I wasn't wrong. That, like,
yeah.
every bit of trust I've put in you has been 100%. Like, show me. And
mm-hmm.
she does.
She does. And, I mean, the biggest way possible. She throws the Feather of Truth, which ends the spell, but it also reveals the serpent. So now Carter can see the serpent above them. Set can, too. I think, like, everybody can
see
it.
Said, like, the feather, like, dissolved and the material of the feather, like, coated
yeah.
the snake, so everyone standing there could see
right.
this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, kind of another mini-twist?
Mini-twist, yes.
Yeah. Face of Horror screams, "Wretched gods," and tries to kill Sadie, which, like, I kind of thought he was just a nobody.
Yeah.
But it turns out he's, like, maybe the most important one.
Kind of.
Carter stops him, throws a sword, you know, gets him, perfect aim. As Face of Horror is dying, he speaks with the snake's voice, saying this was but a tiny bit of his essence that caused all of this chaos. So just imagine what I'll do when I'm fully formed.
Just a tiny sliver of Set was able to control Amos enough to get them to do all these things that he wanted. Just the tiniest sliver of this snake
mm-hmm.
was enough to cause all of this.
To,
like,
to control Set.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean,
okay.
It's like nesting dolls of horror is, like, what it is. You just peel one layer back and you're like, oh man, there's another god and he's even worse than the first
that
one.
That is perhaps the most apt description of
yeah.
this. Nesting dolls of horror.
So that was kind of wild. That
yeah.
was, I mean, tiny twist, big twist.
Yeah.
Because Set really doesn't want to admit that Apophis, who is the snake, was using him. But it's true. That's what was going on this whole time. And we kind of knew Apophis was lingering in the background, but I had no idea that he was inside Face of Horror the whole time.
Definitely not.
And so Sadie says they'll need all the gods, even Ra, who has disappeared, he's gone, yeah, and even Set, to defeat Apophis. And she makes him promise to return to the Duat and be good until they need him to cause trouble on their behalf, which he does like the sound of.
I was going to say, it's funny because he goes from being like, Apophis wasn't controlling me. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what happened. And it's like, oh, so you don't like the shoe being on your foot. Like, The shoe was on our foot, now it's on yours, and you have to admit that, yes, you were being controlled by something greater than you. Sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then it's like, but here's the flip side of that. I would like to allow you to wreak chaos and destruction just for me,
yeah,
instead of against me.
Mm-hmm.
How about we figure this out? Like, understanding. Like, you're gonna go, and you're gonna behave yourself, and when I call you, unleash hell.
Yeah. I mean, it is very much like a Loki situation.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same sort of thing. Like, we need you to be on our side, so we're gonna play nice and hope that you'll just agree to do it. And I think they can kind of count on him wanting revenge on Apophis for what Apophis did.
Yeah.
And she also says Set then sort of appears as himself. In the real world, in the Duat, he's still that swirling blender of sand and rage and stuff. But he appears with red armor, red skin, and a black forked beard. And it just reminded me so much of, like, the devil, which obviously I think they're not necessarily related, but I am very curious about how much of this is Rick's imagination, how much comes from the stories that were told, and like how much one influenced the other, and all that.
I was
going to
say, like, iconography likewise.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we see red, and especially like a forked tail and things like that, and that is a vision that we have come to associate with the devil.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's interesting that that is kind of how this he ends up being described.
Yeah. So Sadie banishes Set for now, and they're left practically standing in the president's backyard, and they rush over to Amos and Zia, and this is where the real twist comes in, I feel like.
This is the, like, Apophis, oh my god.
Yeah.
But, like, it was a tiny sliver of Apophis, so it's,
yeah,
like, big twist, but then there's this other lingering one we didn't know was lingering.
Exactly. So they rush over to Amos and Zia. Zia used her last bit of energy to shield her and Amos as the pyramid exploded, taking Osiris and Julius with it. So, like, their father is gone. I think there's a chance that Julius could be in the Duat with Osiris, that him and Osiris being bonded could have saved him in some way.
Well, here's my other random thought. And there's zero, I have zero grounds to have any thoughts about this at all. She had to destroy the pyramid, and the coffin, the golden coffin, was, like, a part of the chair, which was a part of the pyramid. So, like, it was in there. But, like, it was distinctly colored and colored something different than the rest of the pyramid. So, like, the coffin itself feels like it never was, like, permeated by all the rage and chaos that was surrounding it. So part of me wonders if, like, the coffin itself protected Julius, and now he is with Osiris together as one,
mm-hmm,
in the Duat, like, waiting for the opportunity to come back.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting that the capstone in particular was gold, and then as she started performing the spell, it turned silver. I was like, is that significant?
Right.
I don't know. I also think it's important to remember that this happened to Osiris in the myth. He was killed, he was chopped up, and then he was put back together, and he changed roles. He became basically the king of the dead, like,
yeah,
the underworld. So I think that underworld throne, I think Julius is going to be sitting on it.
That's my interpretation.
Yeah,
too.
So he might be dead, but that doesn't mean that they can't visit him sometimes.
Because, like, the way that Anubis words it, like, the throne has to have someone on it, and, like, the way he's talking to Sadie, it's like, I'm sorry, it has to be your dad. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's like, I'm sorry, it has to be your dad, but that's the reality at this point, is it has to have, someone has to sit the throne, and right now, he's the guy up there in the position to do it, and there has to be a sacrifice, and as much as I don't want it, there's nothing we can do about it.
Are there three thrones?
Well, there were three, because it's, the throne of, the throne with Anubis.
Right.
And then there's the throne that she sees in the hall,
Hall of Ages?
Yes.
With Iskandar.
Well, yeah, that's the third one. And then there's the one she sees in between there.
The throne of the gods,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Of the gods. So, like, I'd almost feel like the throne of the dead and the throne of the gods were, like, the two my mind pictured as, like, the Sadie Carter thrones. And then the throne for the Hall of Ages is, like, the human component.
Yeah.
Because, like, they talk about how the gods, they need to learn the old ways and commune with, you know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like Sadie Carter and Zia.
I'm really... Well, see, the thing is, there are currently four Cains.
Yes.
With Amos in there. So if Julius is in the underworld, Carter, it sounds like, needs to be the one, the, like, throne room of the gods.
It seems like
so would Amos maybe become the new, whatever, Desjardins is right now?
Right, I was gonna say, like, head of the magicians.
Yeah.
The head of the House of Life.
Or is Amos gonna die and, like, maybe Sadie will be that?
Well, like, you know, this is kind of summarizing everything that's about to happen, but, like, Desjardins kind of pops back up, and, like, it seems like he's still in control
for
at
now.
The moment.
Yeah.
Like, maybe, you know, he's gonna continue to kind of sit that throne for now, but, like, eventually it will be somewhere for Amos to be. It's a possibility that may be where Amos ends up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that would make the most sense, just because he's the oldest one. He has the most experience. Like, the other ones are still really learning how to do all
of
this.
Or does it end up being, like, Julius, Amos, Carter, and Sadie?
Maybe.
Like, is it, like, a they rule together or not at all situation?
Yeah, it could be.
Are they going to pull a Percy and be like, this is what I want, and you're going to make it happen?
Yeah.
And otherwise, we can just let this all, you know, dissolve and go, you know.
That would be
this is my one demand.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot of speculation about that, I think. And we're not going to find out what's going on with that now, but I'm very curious about where this is all going to end up. But anyway, more importantly than, you know, saving the world.
Yeah.
We find out that as Zia is fading, she's dying, she was just a placeholder. She tells Carter to find the real Zia and take her on a date to the mall, which was really cute. And I was like, okay, so Zia really is hosting Nephthys. This is just not the real Zia. Then who is she? How is she able to host Nephthys? Is she somebody really special with really special pharaoh blood? Or is she going to burn up like the others will?
Right.
Where is she? But also, this Zia was a Shabti the whole time.
I was going to say, she dies and literally crumbles in front of him.
Yeah.
Like clay. And it's like, hold on.
I did not expect that.
Definitely didn't see it coming.
Yeah. Honestly, I really love that. And it just makes so much sense, because Zia knew the name, but when Set looked into her eyes, Nephthys wasn't there, and Nephthys was with a sleeping host. So Iskandar is the one who protected Zia, who kind of set all of this up. I mean, he's, even from beyond the grave, he is pulling strings.
Well, and as this is all unraveling in front of them, literally, I think it's Sadie who says, like, I remember Iskandar saying, like, I wish I had been able to protect you. I wish I had been able to save you.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But that basically was him admitting to Sadie, like, but I can do something for her.
Yeah.
Like, I can protect everyone by protecting Zia. By not putting Nephthys in the present in front of, you know, Set, and letting him have the possibility of destroying her. by taking that away and keeping Zia safe mm-hmm. and putting this Shabti in her place, I can protect Zia and I can make life easier for you. And, you know, like, it is like the ultimate chess move. It's, yeah. you know, it's that final defender that steps in front of the king at the last possible minute and takes the blow from,
yeah.
you know.
And, I mean, he really did because he yeah. died and, you know, but everything worked out the way it should have. And it really is sad because it's one more person who had to sacrifice themselves so that all of this could work out exactly the way it needed to. But when the world is on the line, when that's hanging in the balance, what else are you going to do?
And I feel like Iskandar would say, like, everyone has to die at some point for yeah. something. At least mine meant something. I got to protect Zia in the meanwhile. Yeah. Meantime, like, I did something with my final moments, with my life and my death. Like,
mm-hmm.
I lived a pretty long and fruitful life. I did a lot of things, but, you know, my end brought about protection that I needed to have happen. So yeah.
But like you mentioned, Desjardins pops up again and he is pissed, but the Canes aren't afraid of him anymore, and this was really wonderful because they were like, yeah, you're not so scary after everything we just faced, and also we're hosting gods, so what are you gonna do,
right?
But even better than that, they know they can't allow the gods to stay inside of them. So they let the gods go. Some of the godly spirit goes back into those amulets, but most of it goes back to the Duat. And in particular, Sadie makes a comment about wondering if Isis will find a new host. And I thought that was really interesting because are we going to bring in a new character who Isis might take over? Could that end up showing that the gods aren't always good, you know, that they could cause more chaos or whatever? No idea, but I really love that, really wordlessly, the Canes decided this together, that they right. were going to give it up. And
a look.
And Desjardins is stunned. I mean, he's still very angry, but he kind of can't do anything now. Again, ultimate chess move.
They took, like, the wind right out of his sails. Yeah. He was ready to, like, declare them enemies and have them eliminated, like, despite everything they just did. And instead it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, you did that, huh?
And so he decides not to fight them because he really can't. At this point, they're literally just children.
Right.
Like, not even hosting gods. But he also says the path of the gods remains closed and that they better not cross the house again. So after everything that that Sadie and Carter did to show them they are responsible, that they can choose the gods and then choose to let go of the powers, after all of that, after seeing that the gods were the only reason why they were able to stop Set and that they need the gods to stop Apophis, Desjardins is like, yeah, no, you cross me again, I'm definitely still gonna kill you kids.
Despite being somewhat powerless, basic human children.
Yeah.
I love how they're basically looking at him like,
yeah,
blah, 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 you're talking, I hear you, we don't care. Like, it's like, we hosted gods, we survived it, we're still standing. I would say, you know, the way they started hosting, like, with the amulets, like, they still have a connection to those mm-hmm. gods, so I feel like there's definitely a chance that if they need to host them again, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, it's kind of right. the point
yeah.
of the amulets. So it's like, if I need this to happen again, like, I got this.
Yeah.
Like, what are you gonna do? Like, what are you gonna do? Like, everyone just saw what happened. Like, all the magicians yeah. were there.
And I think that was part of the reason why he also decided he couldn't do anything, because they were impressed. The other right. magicians were like, yeah, these kids are right. We should listen to them.
They saw Apophis. They saw Set. They saw Sadie basically put Set on a leash.
Yeah.
They saw them willingly give up the gods. Like, they're not idiots. And I think Desjardins, as much as he wants to be the, you know, tyrannical leader of this sect, he's mm-hmm. like, I know the battle's lost here. I'll just tell them, you better not cross me again and go about my day.
Yeah. Yeah, then he basically poofs away with the remaining magicians just as the police close in, gee, thanks. And so Carter and Sadie decide to hightail it out of there with Amos. I think they talk about turning him into a mouse or something like that
yeah.
and carrying him away. before they're all thrown in prison, because that's very real possibility.
I did love the one little detail. I think it's Sadie who says, like, there was a magician who almost bowed.
Yeah.
Like, I love that, like, in that moment, they both are showing such wisdom and just, like, strength that almost unwillingly, the magicians are like, okay, that's my leader. Like, those are my real leaders. Like, Desjardins pretending, but, like, these kids know more than him in a thimble of, you know, a thimble of their knowledge is worth his entire self. So, like,
yeah.
I just like that they've earned not just the respect of the gods and, like, all, like, they earned a lot of respect with the magicians. They just have to figure out a way to make that work in their favor.
Yeah. And maybe in book two, they'll be able to basically have people on the inside who are willing to fight alongside them, and then Desjardins might have no choice but to help. I mean, he's probably going to make it as difficult as possible.
He's
basically,
like, in my head, he's the Minister of Magic. Is it Fudge?
Yeah, I keep thinking Umbridge.
Okay.
Because she's just so, like, stalwart in her, like, decisions and, like, her own twisted morals, even though it makes no sense. And
see, my brain is, like, Cornelius Fudge, like, Voldemort's not back.
Yeah, that's
it can't
true.
Be back.
Yeah.
So it's like, we don't need the gods, and if you do that again, I will get mad at you. Like,
yeah.
No. Like, everyone saw, you moron. Like, you can't deny it anymore. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, I'm getting Cornelius Fudge, but I definitely see the possible Umbridge, too.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess it will depend on where Desjardins ends the series. Like,
yeah.
Does he see the light and make change and, you know, help the kids? Or does he continue to just deny that that any of this is possibly correct? You know, that they might need the gods at all? Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll, time will tell.
So that wraps up that very lengthy chapter, but it was really good. I'm glad it, you know, it kind of feels like we wrapped up the actual plot. We've got one more chapter left, which I'm sure will be a little bit of a, like, okay, we're kind of coming down, we're back to somewhat normal, but hey, we know that there's this other thing kind of lingering on the horizon, and we'll have to, you know, wait until next time to figure out what exactly is going to happen in that final chapter.
I'm certainly hoping for at least a hint of where to start looking for Zia.
Yeah.
That's, like, because I just want, like, a hint of where, what they're going to do next to kind of try and find her. Because that's clearly, like, the biggest lingering mystery is, like, she's out there somewhere sleeping in some sort of enchanted, you know, and we need to find her.
Yeah, like, is she trussed up in some, like, hospital bed in, like, a coma that they think is natural but is actually magical?
Right.
Like, we really have no idea.
Or is she in some sarcophagus and somewhere in Egypt? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many, where would Iskandar put her to keep her safe?
Right.
Like, that's the question.
Yeah. So, favorite lines, favorite moments. What was your favorite line?
So my favorite line is technically what you picked.
Okay.
Because it's so good. Like, it's literally, I went to look at my favorite line. I, like, scrolled through the chapter, went, oh, that one. Went in to put it in, and I went, dang it! Like, it was there.
Yeah.
So Karen's is really good. But I also liked, her mom in Isis's head, that stay focused, dearest, watch for your enemy, because it was a kind of random thing to be saying when your enemy is Set and there's no way not to watch him, and he's kind of right there, so it's like, why are you saying watch out for your enemy? And then with this double vision that Sadie has going on, we can see that there is something more at work here.
Yeah.
And that little, that one line from her mom just gives her the moment of hesitation to see the full picture.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that line kind of stood out to me, too.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But, I mean, mine was pretty funny. It's when Sadie is sort of just thinking to herself, sometimes it's helpful to have someone other than yourself inside your head because one can slap the other.
Like that moment where Carter yells, Sadie, the book! Or Sadie's like, the book. And it's like Isis goes, the book!
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, that's right.
The book.
The book of how to defeat Set. Let's pull that out right now.
What was your favorite moment?
All the stuff with Sadie being able to see both the Duat and Apophis, like, at the same time. You are absolutely right when you were saying, like, describing it as a crocodile that can see above the water and below it, kind of like half eye at the same time. That is such a really cool visual and in a crystal clear way to describe seeing both worlds at once.
Yeah.
Like, I had no problem visualizing Sadie standing there and seeing the world, like almost like she could wipe it and see one thing and then wipe it and see another. And it's just a matter of, like, tipping her eyes, like, you know, like a crocodile in the water. Like, it's, that whole thing was just really cool, really well handled. I don't know how he came, like, how Rick came to write that, but it's the easiest way to describe seeing two things at once. Just really cool.
Yeah. That line probably took him 2 seconds to write.
Right? He's so smart.
Oh my gosh. My favorite moment was Carter and Sadie having that unspoken moment where they both realize that they need to give up their godly powers, that it's the right thing to do, for a lot of different reasons. And this is obviously a theme in Rick's books. I mean, Percy giving up the chance to become a god, to grow old with Annabeth and everything. I think Rick is all about, you know, power being thrust upon children, the next generation, and them not abusing it, them realizing when to step back, when to step up. I think that's, like, a huge theme in Rick's books, and it was really nice to see it in a different way here with the Kane siblings.
It's like power, you know, there's so many things to be like, yeah, this is definitely a lesson adults could learn, could use to learn. Like, we should just deliver Rick's books to adults right now. Because it's like, you know, power is a tool to be used, and it can be used for nefarious purposes or good purposes. Mm-hmm. And he really does lean on using it when you need to, you know, at your kids, you absolutely need the power to be able to change the world in these ways, but then it doesn't need to be, you don't need to harness it forever. Mm-hmm. Like, use it to the best of your ability, do what you can, and then when it's time, relinquish it and be a person and live your life and keep going. You know, it's like, it's a very powerful message, because power corrupts, you know, in so many ways. As soon as people get a taste of power, they can't let it go. And it's like, to instill that in, like, middle grade books, to help kids get an idea of, like, maybe holding on to power is not the most important thing. It's like, that's an insanely adult thing to think about.
Yeah.
But relatable when you are talking about the Canes and when you're talking about Percy. It's not as big. It feels, you know, consumable. So, yeah.
Definitely.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast, or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate them. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas, for anything you want to hear on the podcast in any of those places. We do have a bit of feedback. I mentioned this earlier, and we did not forget. We had a listener reach out to us on Insta, David Ludwig, who has been in contact before. We've definitely read some of his comments before. Went to one of the tour stops, and he shared just a little bit of what was going on at the stop, and so I figured we'd just do a brief kind of summation of what he was talking about. He shared some pictures from the Denver Court of the Dead tour stop. There weren't a lot of, like, secrets or anything this time around, except that David did mention that Rick said he submitted something to Disney's TV division about the Red Pyramid the other day.
Yes.
That it's, and I think he said something like, this is as close as it's felt to reality.
Okay.
Yet. Like, him submitting this to Disney was a big step. It's not a guarantee, it's nothing, but, like, it felt like a bigger step than they've ever taken before.
That's really awesome.
And I mean, let's face it, they'd have to be dumb.
Yeah, I mean, Percy's doing great, you know?
And it's that perfect, like, again, that middle grade story, adventure story, is, like, Disney's bread and butter.
Yeah.
Like, this is their age group. This is where they really shine. This is where Disney Channel shines, you know, yes. so brightly for kids. It's the Hannah Montana yeah. years and all that. So,
but also something I think so relatable to the parents and to the yeah. single people who still love these stories.
It's still so much fun. Yeah, absolutely.
Not single. Single as in no children is what I meant to say.
Yeah. Us non-childbearing
yes.
children. Yeah. No, I definitely know what you mean. But like, yeah, it's... It's a very universal, fun kind of story. And, yeah, it fits right in Disney's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I really hope they take full advantage of the fact that Rick is enmeshed in the Disney world and has been for so long. And now that Percy is an active project, and will continue to be, that hopefully things like Red Pyramid or Magnus or... even Charles and Apollo down the line are possibilities. And so this definitely seems like Red Pyramid is a possibility. They're working on it.
Yeah.
So keep your fingers crossed, because that would be really, really cool. Included in this little package, this little gift that David sent us, was a video about Cocoa Puffs. And this video just kind of gives you like a quick summation of like a few different kinds mm-hmm. of Cocoa Puffs. I will definitely link that in the show notes. It's on Insta, I'm pretty sure, and it just needs to be linked. So you guys should get to watch it. And if you haven't started or haven't finished Court of the Dead yet, you'll get a little taste of what's going on with the Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're coming back from
yes.
the end of the last book, because they definitely were a standout.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. That's but I thought cute. That was really cute. And apparently, like, the gift... for going, like, you got your signed copy of the book. There's also a Cocoa Puff pin.
I did see that. Yeah. It was really cute.
Yeah. Super cute. But thank you so much, David, for A, for going, because that's awesome, and I'm
yeah.
glad you got to go, but for sharing a little bit of what was going on with us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get into Court of the Dead at
yeah.
some point here. Pretty soon, hopefully. All right, so next time we have one more chapter of the Red Pyramid. So we will read chapter 41 next time and finish the book. And then we will probably have a decision, a formal decision.
Yeah.
The votes that we got for what we should do next were pretty one-sided.
Yeah.
So it's kind of clear where we'll probably go next, but Karen and I have not yet formalized a decision.
Yeah.
So
I told you we were going to do it last minute.
Until we talk about it formally, I cannot declare
yes.
that the decision has been made, but I would say it's leaning heavily in one direction.
Yeah.
So, until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out. Bad with names today. What is this?
It starts with a G, doesn't it? I don't think what that's
your name. No. That was really good. I appreciate that. Anyway,